This is the national public broadcast of W. Dean Muhammad, Muslim American Society leader. The following interview was conducted at Muslim Journal newspaper for Islamic broadcasting of Lake County, August the 4th, the year 2001. Interviewing Imam Muhammad is Sabur Amir Shakir.
Father, now when your father first started teaching or first was with W.D. Fard in Detroit, Michigan, and he was on the run for a while, how did these different cities come up with these numbers? Detroit number one,
Mr.
number
Brown
two?
Himself, my father's teacher.
Okay.
Was the one who, he went with my father, he took my father with him, I should say, to establish number two, that's Chicago, and number three, Milwaukee.
Okay.
Mr. Farrar is on the record. There are believers still living who know that Mr. Farrar went to Kareem Allah. He was one who witnessed my father and Mr. Farrar preaching together in Chicago and going to Milwaukee to preach. And he's still alive. He's in Chicago.
Okay.
Still alive. I can go visit him when I leave you if I want.
Okay.
And a very beautiful person. He's a very beautiful man. I pray Allah keep him and give him comfort in this life and be greater in the hereafter. I mean, the numbers were given, and I do believe that, again, he's speaking through code language. Number one is the first one. It's Detroit. And Detroit manufactured automobiles. It was known for manufacturing automobiles. Then he came, and it's also known for great Muslim population of migrants who came from Islamic lands.
The
first ones, and perhaps the greatest numbers might be still of them that's still there, are the people from Yemen, the Yemenites, are the people from Yemen. And you know Yemenites in the Bible too.
Really?
Yes, sir. People from Yemen. Yemen is where there exists still people of African descent and of African mix, of African descent. And it's believed that the Queen of Sheba had her throne there.
Mm.
Yes, in southern Yemen. That she had a throne. I'm not sure the southern Yemen, not all the Yemen, but in one of the sections. It's still divided too. They still have a problem there. So united Yemen. That she had her throne there. And I think Mr. Farrar, very careful thinker, very methodical thinker, and a planner who's and a visionary who is building something for future recognition, not for present recognition. He's building something for future recognition by a select few. The many won't be interested in his code. The many won't be interested in his language and what he fabricated and by his language, or by language, of his language finding. But he was a mystic, in a sense, because he believed in the power of prayer. He believed that if he did something and he had good intentions and he prayed to God for the success of that thing, he believed it would happen. I know this from my mother's language to me, and my mother's talk to me, and my father's talk to me, but I know it mostly from studying his works to see his mind. I've studied his language and his works to see his mind. Okay, and that's how we can know somebody. You can know me better, not by looking at me here. You can know me better by studying my language to see how I'm thinking. Yes. So anyway, I studied that way, and I know it yet. So he put all that together to give a message to us. Number one is the beginning, and it started in a town that had a good number of Yemenites, people from Yemen, that can be tied back to the glory of African-American people, the Sheba. Now, maybe some Arabs will say, oh, you blacks are not from Sheba. They might say that. But African Americans thought we were from Sheba before Mr. Farrar came.
Okay.
They thought Sheba was a black woman.
Okay.
So he's going on what's real in African American people, not on whether the Arab people or his Arab brothers might believe or not believe. Okay, so that's one reason. Another reason is, which is deeper to understand, which is more difficult to understand, when I say deeper, I mean more difficult to understand, and that is why he chose the Motor City. Motor City. I'm going to leave it right there.
Okay.
And number two now, I came to Chicago. Number two is Chicago. And Chicago is the central city At that time, it was central for transportation. Yes. Okay. Trains, most about trains. Trains, shipping, manufacturing, Chicago was central. But it was also known for its livestock. There was the stockyards here. And he talks about livestock a lot in the lessons. You're familiar with his old lessons. So it was the, Chicago was a livestock city. Livestock, not their stock. So there's a, you have to know how he thinks to know why he did these things. So it became number two. Okay? And number three was meal walking. Take him to the meal. Now that he's alive, take him to the meal.
Okay.
And that's all he did.
Okay.
He left the rest to my father.
Okay.
My father said, now let's go to the government. That's number four in Washington, D.C.
Okay. Okay.
Let's get the government's attention.
Okay. So everywhere your everywhere your father went, he established a temple there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. No. Everywhere he went, he tried to establish a temple, but no. He also looked at places, certain places, and he sent people there to establish them in those places.
Okay.
He sent Malcolm he made Malcolm the minister of New York City, mm-hmm. and he sent another older man there before Malcolm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Maybe more than one. I know one. He sent Sultan Muhammad, I think, from Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. He was like Malcolm in the olden days.
Okay.
Tall, dynamic, very exciting speaker, forceful speaker. And my father sent him, I'm sure, to New York. I believe Sultan Muhammad went to New York.
Before Malcolm?
Yeah, but, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but I know of others. I don't want to name one.
Okay.
Well, I have to name him now.
Okay.
I won't give you his name. But I don't want to give you his name because he's responsible for the 5%ers.
Okay.
And that was not all Elijah Muhammad. Wished that he did that. In fact, Honorable Elijah Muhammad was very angry with him for what he for changing the teachings of putting the emphasis on things that made trouble.
Mm-hmm. If you just tuned in, we're at the New African Building in East Hazelcrest, Illinois, and we're talking to the leader of the Muslim American Society, Imam W. Dean Muhammad, and I'm your host, Abu Amar Shakir. Don't forget, you can catch the Imam on Radio 750 on your AM dial every Sunday morning at 7:30 to 8:30. Brother Imam, was your father, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, was he ever a mason or a shriner?
He wanted to be, but he never became one. He was too poor.
Okay.
But wherever he could find some of that literature, he was attracted to it,
mm-hmm.
even before he met Mr. Farrar.
Okay.
It was in a few years before he met Mr. Farrar, when he was in Detroit. As you know, he came from Macon, Georgia, to Detroit. Well, he was born in Sandersville, and then he married in Macon. And then he and my mother, after having about three or four children, they moved to Detroit. And in Detroit, he had the opportunity to come upon some knowledge of masonry, black masonry. It was called the Masonic
temple or
shrine? There's a black one, and then there's a black female. Eastern Star is a female. So he became knowledgeable of both. My mother too. Me and my mother. And what else? Nobody will lead a more science temple. It was also there before, which was Islamic.
Okay.
Attempting to identify, not attempting, but actually connecting African Americans or blacks in America with Islam. The Moorish Science Temple was there before Mr. Farrar came and established his temple. And he used the same language, temple.
Okay.
And my father had been exposed to the Moorish Science Temple teachings also.
Was he a member of that?
No.
Okay.
No. Some Moorish Science people think he was. And it was not my father who adopted the fairs of the Moorish Americans. It was his teacher,
right.
who was not American, who was not African, or black. He adopted the Moorish American affairs, which was not really the Moorish, he didn't see it as the Moorish American affairs. These affairs, he saw it as the Turkish affairs, he saw it as the Moroccan affairs, you see?
Right.
But the Moroccans, Moroccan members of the Moorish Science Temple, the leadership, they think Honorable Elijah Muhammad was a member of their Moorish Science Temple, and he brought that influence into the formation or the making of the Nation of Islam. But that's not so. It was his teacher, Mr. Ron, who adopted the fairs, and it was to a psychological effect, to give them that distinction and identity. And you know, the Shriners and the Masons, they have the same fairs.
Right.
So all of that was, in the early 30s, all of that was attractive to the militant blacks.
Okay.
And he was just using good psychology. This is what they like, let me dress them up. Okay. It's what they like.
Okay. Now, who came up with the term, did your father come up with the term, or W.D.'s father come up with the term, black Muslims?
No, it was not my father, it was not any of the leaders of our community, or the present or past. Mm-hmm. It was my good friend and my father's good friend who passed away a couple of years ago, Dr. Sirik Lincoln, great African-American, a black theologian. He wrote a book called, and he titled it, Black Muslims. And that's what caused people to start calling us black Muslims. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is on record for saying, we are black, but we are not black Muslims, we are just Muslims.
Okay. Now, let's talk about you a little bit. You said a couple of times, I think...
But we are black Muslims too, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, but what he's saying is don't hurt your Muslim identity with this black label.
Okay, okay.
Because a Muslim is Muslim, mm-hmm. and his originality, whether he's black, white, brown, or red.
Mm-hmm. We will return to today's broadcast after this important announcement. Imam W.D. Muhammad, Muslim American spokesman, will be making appearances throughout the country, and those wishing to support his mission of propagation and community assistance are asked to send their contributions made payable to Ministry of W.D. Muhammad and mail to Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois 60409. And now back to today's program.
Brother Imam, let's talk about you. You said you were expelled a couple of times, I think, out of the Nation of Islam, and you were out, what have you. I understand that you were a welder at one time?
I'm still a welder.
Okay.
Certified.
So how did they
combination welder. Found it.
Okay. Is that how you were...
I don't weld, but I'm a welder. Once a welder, you're always a welder. Okay. I think I was welding before I got the training to weld.
Okay.
I was welding good things together with my words.
Mm-hmm. You still are.
I hope I have praised you to Allah.
Okay, in order to get that job, I think I heard you or mentioned in one of your lectures that you had to change your name, you and Jabba.
To get a job. Mm-hmm. First, it was my oldest brother. Mm-hmm. My oldest brother went out and he died. The only one of us from my mother who had passed away is my oldest brother, the elder of us, Emmanuel. Emmanuel always was very industrious. And he found ways to make money as a hustler, but not in the bad sense, in the good sense. My mother said he would go out and collect wood, the coal would fall off of trains, whatever he could get himself, he actually did to help his my mother in the house, and my father was away. This was before the religion embraced the name of Muslim and Islam. And he continued to be a very industrious person, priding himself in making his own money and making it legitimate. So to do that, he had to change his name because we were called by the name Muhammad, but we didn't pronounce it Muhammad. The teacher of my father told us to pronounce it Muhammad. And it's almost like Turkish people pronounce the name of Muhammad, our prophet's name, peace be upon him. They call him Mehmet. Right now, if you go to Turkish, to the land of the Turks, which is almost 100% Muslim, 90-some% Muslim, when you hear them refer to our prophet, they will say Mehmet,
okay.
Not Muhammad, okay. Mehmet. And Turkish people, they have, I hate to use the expression, but in a, not to condemn them, because I love the Turkish people, they have corrupted the pronunciation and the language, the Arabic language. They have corrupted the language. Now, you know, corruption, when you're speaking of corruption, it doesn't mean that they have brought in immoral things. It means that it doesn't have its originality. So it can't be used to express, to convey ideas, etc., like it was used or could be used in its original form. Mm-hmm. So they have corrupted the language. That's what you mean by corrupted language. They have changed it and adulterated it. Adulterated. This expression adulterated is understood. Adulterated the language. Extremely. They have extreme qualities. So extreme adulteration. And the name Muhammad is pronounced Mehmet. This teacher of my father was very, very experienced, person given to experiment, to make experiments, and a very, I would say, true communicator, very true communicator, using the common person and the uneducated, but speaking through the common person and the uneducated to the higher ups. Do you know the FBI sees all of the teachings of the Nation of Islam, especially that Mr. Rodner, when they took my father to prison?
Mm-hmm.
That's on record.
Mm-hmm.
It can be checked. They seized all of the words and writings and teachings of Mr. Farrar. And from that language, why did they seize it? They thought it was no value, but they think they would seize it. They wouldn't seize it if they had it.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard of them seizing except to bring the court to persecute organization. I never heard them seizing everything. And they seized it because they knew that this man was speaking in code. They knew that. And he knew that they would eventually get his words. So his words were to go to them as well as to us.
Okay.
To help us, but also to let them know the mind, the superior mind, that has come into your country and have now produced these people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm condemning you for this, for that, for that, for that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to, I'm sure, decode his language, decipher, decode his name, his language. And I'm sure they've come up with a lot. And I believe he's made a great contribution to the improvement of the thinking in the intelligentsia of, especially in that select group, in the intelligentsia of the white race in America,
okay.
And maybe now in Europe and all over.
Okay.
Yeah, this man will one day be known, because
okay.
They're going to have to put him in books,
okay.
And they're going to have to put his therapeutics in books.
Okay.
Yeah, he brought some powerful therapeutics, not only for the black man, but also for the white race in the whole world, mainly for America.
Mm-hmm. Well, Imam, are you one of the few, I mean, maybe some of the older pioneers were able to break down the symbolic language of W.D. Farrar?
All of us were told, were called students, and we were told to study those lessons. They were called lessons.
Mm-hmm.
To study those lessons, and they were called problems. You know what I said?
Mm-hmm.
They were called lessons and problems.
Mm-hmm.
We were told to study those lessons and problems. Because a problem book, you know, 34 problems.
Mm-hmm.
You familiar with some of those original pamphlets, the little the books we had? 34 problems. That was the title of the book from Mr. Farrar.
Sure.
34 problems. So problem means it's to be solved, right?
Okay.
So you ain't supposed to take it and think it's just the answer.
Mm-hmm.
You ain't getting the answer, you're getting problems.
Right.
So because we were so slow to catch on to that, and seemed like the leadership under Honorable Elijah Muhammad was not going to catch on to that,
mm-hmm.
The Honorable Elijah Muhammad had all of it taken out of circulation in the 50s.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking again of your father, what type of relationship, say for instance, did your father have with the civil rights leaders, such as Dr. King and some other of the civil rights leaders during your father's lifetime?
You know, we're poles apart. Separation, separatist, integration, we're poles apart. Christianity and the Nation of Islam is Islam, poles apart. But the purpose the same. The purpose was to free our people from being subservient and slavish in a white man's world. Okay? And it was to free us so we could pursue our own path to our own excellence as human beings, to be at the best we can be, as Cuba Gooding said in the movie, you know. So that's what it was all about. So how can we be a part, really? So privately, Ali Elijah Muhammad was hugging that man.
Mm-hmm.
They actually met in my father's house.
Mm-hmm. I saw pictures.
Yes, he had dinner. My father had invited Dr. King to dinner. He ate at my father's table. They talked as foes or rivals, but they talked more as friends. And they had great appreciation for one another.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, ma'am, I heard you make a speech on, matter of fact, I think it was a couple of weeks ago on the Sunday morning program, and I'm quite sure it was a recording from earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But you, if I remember correctly, you said that the Nation of Islam was a satire. Do you remember?
Yes. If the audience understands satire, because the satire, you learn about that when you get in English 102,
okay.
Not even in English 101. yes. So satire is like creating theater, and the theater will communicate to the audience, the stage audience, what the composer of that piece wants the audience to see, you see, or to hear, or to understand. So here's the designer of the Nation of Islam, not only doing a practical work for his audience, and he's even recruiting his audience, and he is marshaling them, and he's assigning them to a practical work. He's doing that. And at the same time, all the things that he's doing, he thought about it very carefully, so that when the free thinker outside of his movement looks at it, the wise, looks at it, especially in language, they will say, hey, this man is doing a satire on the white world. Masterful job.
Okay.
And I'm sure he studied many masters.
Okay.
He is not just his knowledge.
Okay.
Yeah. Mr. Farad, I'm speaking about, okay. The teacher of my father.
Okay. Well, now, speaking of civil rights leaders, and I think we're going to cut that short because I want to ask you some more questions, but we'll do that at another time, inshallah, because I want to talk about the convention.
Okay.
Can you tell us a little bit, for the benefit of our viewing audience that didn't see the last program, what's coming up with your annual convention?
Yes. Well, first of all, the annual convention is in the tradition, it's the keeping in the spirit of the Muslims under my father to keep themselves whole as a national and now even a community outside of America. We have been in the Caribbean and other places. In fact, I'm not like Muhammad, we've been in those places. In Africa, we have our followers in Africa, belong to this community, in Caribbean. So these, Bermuda, as you know, strong, good following there in Bermuda. And it's to keep us with a strong sense of congregational wholeness, and I would say national wholeness. That's the main benefit. And by wholeness, we mean we have to have one language, one aim, one aim. We have to be under one rule, and we should have one logic, and we should have one mission. So that means we have to come under one leadership too. We should have one leadership. So if we don't have these national meetings to bring everybody together from all these distant places to hear what is the Muslim American society, And what does the Muslim American society offer to African American people and to the world of civilized people? And what does the Muslim American society has as its main interest, and where is it going? So when we come all together and hear answers to those questions, we go back home feeling more confident that we can really act out our part in this great work, or this great movement. Yeah. That's the main purpose. But this coming convention in 2001 will offer more of what is very special for us as Muslims and as human beings who want to live out the best of our lives, best of our future. We have the best, want to have the best future in the world. It will have more meaning for us than previous meetings, previous annual meetings, our annual conventions. In the time of Elijah Muhammad, although he freed us to come into universality, to see our mission as not only a mission in the black community, but a mission in the civilized community of mankind as Muslims, following Muhammad the Prophet and his tradition, prayers and peace be upon him. Don't be like Muhammad did things to free us in the last two or three years of his life, leadership. But still, we were not as free enough to embrace the job of real Islam that require that we be of use and benefit and help to all mankind, even though we work in our private quarters. What we do, if a man from China come and see it, he should see beauty and logic and goodness and help for even him if he wants to benefit. Okay? Father said, the best of you, the one who benefits mankind the most, all people. God says of Muhammad the Prophet, who said this to us, he says of him, you are a mercy to all people. Rahmatan lil alameen, a mercy to all the world, to all the world. So this convention coming up will be bringing that message home stronger.
Be sure to join us next time for the National Public Broadcast of W. Dean Muhammad, Muslim American Society Leader. For more on the ministry of Imam W. Dean Muhammad, call 1-708-798-6653. All right, Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. For Muslim Jones, he's local distributor. And thanks for listening.